Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, I'm Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network.
And first to bat, up to bat, blow it. You know, you go away for a week, Matt, and I can't talk. You know, I was so nervous last time. I was winging this all by myself.
You were on the high wire without a net.
I know.
Out of town last week. My apologies.
Yeah, he was helping his son move. He's got this weight reduction thing going on, so, you know, he needed to lift some heavy objects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good workout, let me tell you. And, Ben usually listens, I think, but he is now safely ensconced in Syracuse, New York. So,
oh, good for
howdy
him.
Ben.
Okay. And then we have calling in from Grand Rapids, my hometown, Mike LaMonaco, Director of Marketing and Communications for Open Systems Technologies. And you got a big shoe coming up there on February 8th. Why don't you talk about that, Mike?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me back, I should say.
Yes.
Yeah. February 8th, that is a Wednesday evening here in Grand Rapids. We are, OST is really excited to be hosting the Meetup of Meetups event, which is a collaboration between Software Grand Rapids and what is known as GR Dev Night, and along with about 30 other local user groups, meetups, and software events are all coming together under one roof for networking, for dinner, and to learn more about what is this amazing community we have here in West Michigan. I think there's other, even some folks coming over from the east side of the state to share in the night. So there's going to be, you know, I think a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz in the air, certainly a lot of different perspectives relative to the technology sector represented that evening. And I think that's one of the most exciting parts for us, for OST, is that because of our depth of expertise and where we play, we feel like we have a pretty robust solution offerings. And so we represent some of the groups here, not all of them, but the opportunity not only for our employees, but other folks coming together to really see that all this buzz that the region is getting around tech, and really the state of Michigan is getting around tech, is well-deserved. And we need to all take an active role in engaging, in bringing awareness, and promoting all the great things that all of our companies are doing and all these individuals are doing.
So who's going to be attending? What types of groups?
Yeah, so there, like I said, there's about 30 of them. There's the WestMichigan.net user group, BitCamp, which is a wonderful organization doing a lot of great work exposing students, primarily women, young women, to software development. The Agile Leadership Network, Michigan Council of Women in Technology, GR Web Dev, Mobile Mondays. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, all the way to, you know, the Python user group, the Django Girls Grand Rapids, GR Testers, the West Michigan Tech Talent. So looking at how do we address some of the opportunities that we have in any of our organizations for hiring. You know, it's very difficult right now because the competition is so fierce. I mean, we're talking about an industry in software especially where we have about a 1% unemployment rate nationally. And the Big Data Hadoop user group are a few. There's a lot of other ones. IT Management Association, the list goes on and on. So a lot of different areas of the technology spectrum all coming in under one roof. And I think that's the great thing about this industry as well. I know I get asked about it a lot, of competition versus co-opetition. And I tend to talk about the technology industry and sector more around co-opetition and the idea that, you know, today's competitor could be tomorrow's partner. And so let's all, you know, treat each other with respect, whether we're going head-to-head for projects or, you know, we're looking to find an extension of our teams, you know, even with the depth that we have here at OST. We certainly don't do it all and do not try to do it all. And we have some fantastic partners, some of which for us are even competitors at times. I think that's one of the really neat, unique, and fun things about this industry.
Is there a maximum number of folks you can accommodate, or is it open to all? And
You know, we're gonna try to be open to as many people as we can. We're very fortunate to have a pretty large space, a little over 20,000 square feet. So hopeful that we can fit everyone in here. But I certainly would not wait to register. Again, with 30 different user groups and meetup folks represented, I'm guessing tickets will go fast. I think they're only about $10 a piece, so pretty low entry point to come. So I would say don't delay because, you know, I'm pretty sure the GR City of Grand Rapids Fire Department has some codes and restrictions on how many people we can have here during one time. So we'll adhere to that, but you know, I would encourage people to get out there and register if you're interested. Whether you're part of one of these organizations or you're just interested in what's going on in tech, I think this is a great event to participate, no matter where you fall in that spectrum.
Why don't you give them that address to register? So
Yeah, of course. To register, you can go to grdevnight.org. And the event, again, is going to be held here in Grand Rapids. At our headquarters here at Open Systems Technologies, which is located on the west side of Grand Rapids at 605 Seward Avenue Northwest.
All right. Well, we'll give that URL one more time before the end of the segment, I'm sure. But, Mike, I wanted to move on to other things.
Sure.
Like the Internet of Things these days. What are you seeing out there in terms of you know, how people are adopting these technologies?
Sure. We've been involved with, you know, connected products and certainly now IoT for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years at OST. And man, how it's evolved is just amazing. You know, one of our first projects in the connected product space was with Johnson Controls and with their energy management systems for building efficiencies. And now today, you know, it's like you can't go anywhere without hearing about connected products and IoT, certainly nationally, but regionally here in the Midwest. And what we are seeing is, you know, it's certainly moving outside of just traditional manufacturers or makers of consumer goods. We're really seeing it go, you know, a little bit into healthcare, you know, certainly into retail, which is a very interesting space. And really becoming a part of our everyday lives, right? No matter where you are, or it could be in your home too, right? And home goods. And so with that, we, OST, we're seeing a lot of focus put on the idea of user experience and what that experience feels like, looks like, smells like, all the senses. And how they impact our use or desire to use these products, which tend to be at a premium cost. And why is that? Well, we feel it is because without a solid user experience, very few folks are going to go out and invest in the research and development to create these products. And certainly the consumer or the businesses that are buying these products are not going to buy them at a premium if folks aren't going to adopt them and use them and pay for such. Because without a solid user experience, like I said, people tend to abandon the product. And/or the data that's getting pushed through these products is really not good data that the companies can then use to create value in iterating and making the products better. So really a lot of it starts with that user experience and how good and solid is that. And at the end of the day, I think all of us can agree we're starting to see this physical and digital world come together. And so we have an expectation of what products in our physical and digital lives are like. And when those lines are blurred, we need something that's pretty seamless.
Okay, so let's also talk about you guys have done some impressive expansion overseas. I don't remember all the locations, but I know you've opened some new ones. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, so we are our first venture across the pond, so to speak, was into London. That was back in about end of 2012, beginning of 2013. Today, we now have offices in both Hong Kong and Singapore, in addition to London. And all this global expansion for us really falls under the idea of data center modernization. We have some proprietary solutions that we have created in partnership with a handful of clients that have led us over to this this global expansion. So this is very much a customer-led scenario for us, or scenarios, where we have been asked by our customers to implement some of the solutions that we have here in domestically abroad for them, in and around their data center management. So this could be procurement models. It could be automation. We're seeing a lot of desire to go to more of an automated presence in the data center. And certainly the whole idea of, cloud and as a service and consumption-based purchasing of products in the data center are really helping to drive this area of our business for us. And we couldn't be more excited about it. It's certainly an honor to be able to be asked by our partners, our customers, to go with them into new geographies or existing geographies to provide a great solution. And certainly an amazing opportunity for our employees to expand their roles, their skill sets, and hopefully someday to be hiring more people here domestically and globally.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about data center modernization. What kind of trends are you seeing there these days?
Yeah, so it really comes down to speed to market. And so what's driving this? Well, IoT is certainly driving some different behaviors in the data center. Certainly the use of data and taking data and really making information out of that data that businesses can use to grow or evolve their services. And so with that, there are investments in the data center and certainly continuing to be. Now, whether those are on-prem or off-prem or in the cloud, and we can get into that, but we are seeing certainly the IT teams and the business coming together to create value, to innovate, and that's something that we want to empower as much as we possibly can, because we think it's important for any business, no matter what size or scale you are, for the IT side and the lines of business to come together to really drive true innovation in their products or in their efficiencies of their business. So, like I said, we're seeing a lot of demand for consumption-based models, as well as, speed to market. The quicker a data center environment can get up and running, the quicker the company can launch a new product. So it all goes hand in hand. And guess what? They still need security and reliability and uptime and backup. So all those things are still very important. And the pace and the speed to which demands of the IT and lines of business are only accelerating. And again, like I said, IoT and certainly data, big data, are huge parts of this.
All right. Give us, Mike, we're just about out of time here. So give us the URL of that February 8th meetup again, please.
Yeah, February 8th meetup is grdevnight.org. I do see there is about 10 to 12 tickets remaining, so I would get out there quick and purchase those. And you can learn more about OST at ostusa.com.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike LaMonaco, Director of Marketing and Communications at Open Systems Technologies, OST, which started over in Grand Rapids, but is now rapidly expanding across the globe. But thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys.
And this is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast, and we'll be right back.
just leave me a short message or text.
Okay.
Call back? Nope. No? All right, we'll just pick it up. Go ahead and bring us in.
Oh, shit.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, and we are supposed to have a guest right now, but he hasn't called in yet. So
calling in
Mike
from
and
Chicago,
I
yes.
are just going to talk about the news of the day. So what do you think? What's the weirdest IT news you've heard lately?
The weirdest IT news. Gosh, nothing that immediately comes to mind. I mean, I'm flooded with this stuff all the time, right? I should know this. But weird, that puts a whole different spin on it.
Yeah.
Just false news, I guess, but that takes us into a whole different place where we probably shouldn't go, right?
Okay. Well, in the headlines today, if you're looking for a place to park in Charleston, South Carolina, a parking spot is going for $74,000 there. So that's even high by New York standards.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but yeah, I'm just looking at Slashdot here. Let's see. Dropbox finally brings its Google Docs competitor out of beta, so we've got a Google Docs competitor now. That'll be interesting. Sony is warning it's going to take a $1 billion write-down, and it blames slowing DVD sales. Mike, do you still buy discs, music, or movie, or otherwise, or do you stream everything now?
Pretty much stream everything. I mean, I still have a whole closet full of CDs.
Yeah, me too.
That I don't know what to do with. Get my shotgun out and say, pull!
Yeah, yes.
Maybe aftermarket for that. I don't know.
Yeah, you only need so many coasters after all, you know? I mean, I'm just, you know. So, just in case you thought everybody in the world was getting a Fitbit, they've just announced that they're going to cut 6% of their staff following a disappointing fourth quarter. So I guess, Mike, there weren't as many people buying Fitbits as we all thought.
Well, I got one free with my Note 7.
Ah, okay.
The actual burner, as it were,
yep.
that I had to return, but that I got to keep my Fitbit. But I did it for a while, but, I just didn't want to wear it all. It runs down. You only get, like, about 18 hours of charge out of it, and then you got to put it back on the...
So you don't even get a full 24 hours out of it. How are you supposed to wear it around the clock then? You
know? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't even make sense. Okay, in astronomical news, we discovered a new asteroid yesterday. 8 hours before it whizzed by us at only 40,000 miles distance. So, you know, we might not get that much notice when the next dinosaur killer really comes, I guess.
Well, that was only the size of a truck. So unless it hits you right smack on in a big city or something.
Yeah, that's pretty small by asteroid standards.
Yeah, half-mile ones are the one we got to worry about, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that one would just be like one big bomb, essentially, because that one was like, yeah, it was like only the size of a house, basically. But that's still enough at, 30 kilometers a second to do some serious damage. I wanted to Vinyl Technologies is a company that's out there, and for all of you vinyl fans, I know vinyl's been making a big comeback among music aficionados, and I gotta tell you, a record in good shape with a good cartridge system still to me sounds better than anything else. I don't know about you, but there's actually a technological advance being announced in record pressing. It should drag vinyl production into the modern era. It uses modern engineering. It's more reliable and makes it easier to switch out the negatives of the press records. And it sports a trimming and stacking system that can better handle large-scale production. There's also a bunch of new sensing technology that will make for better records. So they're still improving LP technology. How about that?
Well, according to a lot of audio aficionados that I do know, they're saying that vinyl still gets you the best music. That digital music just isn't as good as that old technology.
Well, I mean, yeah, digital music is compressed sort of by definition. It has to be. Otherwise, the storage would get too big.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some things, analog is better. Also, I kind of like the way analog wears out slowly instead of all at once. You know, the way digital technology works is that it works perfectly every time until it doesn't work at all, and then it's broken forever and you have to throw it away.
Yeah.
You know, a record will slowly get, you know, cracks and pops and hisses and that kind of thing. So
remember the old days of 8-track tapes?
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah.
I actually had an 8-track tape player that was hooked into my stereo because I bought some of them for my car way back when. And then, you know, cassettes came along. That's the other thing that's happening right now is cassettes are coming back, of all things.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. That's it's sort of like the comeback of vinyl, I suppose it makes sense. Cassettes was the next, you know, big thing after vinyl. So they
but not
are
for your vehicle. I mean, you can't even get a CD player in a car anymore.
No, I know. Yeah.
So you'd have to have everything through your MP3 player or something like that, I guess.
I think so.
Well, it must be just for home use.
But
where do you buy? I guess you could still buy them, right?
Yeah.
Never really look for them, but.
Well, I've still got a stereo that has a, you know, one of the things where you'd pop in a cassette and then you could make a duplicate of it. So I've still got that technology in my house. That's how ancient my stereo system is.
Hmm.
Here's a favorite that I found. Tostitos, okay? The snack. When do you eat Tostitos?
Not anymore, but...
Well, sometimes when you've been drinking, maybe, you know,
yeah,
you start
yeah,
to
late
crave
at night or something. You get
like
you've got the crunchy kind of thing going.
Yeah. Well, Tostitos has developed a special bag available for a limited time that can detect if you've had too much to drink.
No kidding.
Yeah. It's all black packaging, measures your breath for traces of alcohol, and if the test reveals you're sober, a green circle appears on the bag. But if it decides you've been drinking too much, an image of a red steering wheel appears on the otherwise stark black bag, along with a reminder not to drive and a $10 credit for Uber.
Well, so that's
a pretty cool idea.
Innovative marketing. I like that. That's very good.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Now you just need a beer can that when you've had too many, you hear your wife's voice yelling at you or something. You know, put that beer down.
You've had enough.
Or your mom.
You're not. You can't still be thirsty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A new paper, forced vegetarianism can have bad effects. I am a dedicated omnivore, still like meat, even though I am trying to lose weight here. But there's a new study out of the University of Strasbourg. Where is that? Germany? Switzerland?
No, that's in Germany.
Austria? Germany? No, okay. Is it Germany? Okay.
It is.
It turns out that if you feed hamsters an all-corn diet, they turn cannibal. They start eating each other.
Corn?
Yes.
So that explains those folks in the Midwest?
I guess.
I don't know. I mean, they eat a lot of corn, too, right?
Yeah. Well, but and maybe...
Is that really going on them farms?
It hasn't happened in cows. I know they feed corn to cows, even though cows are supposed to eat grass. But they do feed it to feeder lot cows that we all, you know, that we all eat. But a monotonous diet of corn causes hamsters to exhibit some unusual behavior.
The vegetarian thing, maybe.
Cannibalism. Yes.
They've got to have meat, so... You looking good to me, babe. You know?
It says improperly cooked maize-based diets have been associated with higher rates of homicide, suicide, and cannibalism in humans. So you call it maize.
Yes, we do, actually. Well, unfortunately, we're as you can tell, we're doing tap dancing here because our guest didn't call in from Chicago. I'm not sure why that is because I talked to him a couple hours ago, but... These things happen. So we'll keep giving you the weird stuff in the news here for five more minutes before our next guest.
Okay. And, that's Keith Brophy, by the way, from the Michigan Small Business
Development. No, that's the good one we hope is going to call in.
Yeah,
right?
Well, he's a good, reliable guy.
Yeah.
So, you know. Let's see. What else can I find here? This is an interesting question about IT hiring and, you know, the favorite Matt Rausch question, are you hiring, that
yes.
kind of thing. Should you tell future employers your salary history? You know, what do you think about that?
Oh, well, that's always tough on negotiations. Because I never like to throw out the opening number because I don't know what ballpark we're in.
Yeah.
I always want to hear.
It's really an awkward moment, isn't it? Because you don't, every time I've ever interviewed for a job, salary never comes up until the very end.
Right. And then they tell you rather than ask you.
Right. And I can only recall one time in my career when I had to walk away from a job that I basically got offered just because the salary offer was so ridiculously low.
That was always a problem in the newspaper business.
Well, this was television.
Oh.
I was working at the Leelanau Enterprise at the time, up in northern Michigan. and the CBS affiliate in Cadillac, TV 9 and 10. Yes, it was so unpopulated of an area that they actually have two towers, you know, 150 miles apart and broadcast on two different channels.
Hmm.
But they were the CBS affiliate. They had an opening for a reporter. And I said, well, I'll try TV. What the hell? And it turned out it was like $80 a week less than I was making at the small newspaper because it's such a small market up there. And they had a union contract. And the guy says, this is all I can offer you. You know, it's a union contract. I can't pay any more than this. And I couldn't afford the pay cut. So
right.
I turned down
family,
the TV
right?
job. Yeah, yeah, right. Well, I didn't have a family at that point, and I still couldn't afford to pay cut.
Mm.
But it's just as well anyway. If I'd gone into television, I would have had to, you know, I never would have gotten to drink this much beer, and I would have had to straighten my teeth, and, you know, it just wouldn't have been good.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
I can understand.
Would have paid a lot for dentistry, you know.
Yeah. You might have been orange, too.
Yeah.
I mean, not to spread a... Yeah. Some people just wear way too much TV makeup. I don't get that at all.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I also wanted to point out, we always talk about, you know, IT and reliability and new technology and that kind of thing. There is a Strata server out there somewhere working for an IT application architect that has been running continuously for 24 years. It has never gone down. Apparently, it's had uninterrupted power supply.
Apparently,
but
yeah.
It was booted up in 1993.
Wow.
You know, it's running like Windows NT 3.1, you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
The Strata server is still in operation. And guess where it is? Great Lakes Works, the steel mill in Dearborn, Michigan.
No kidding.
Yep, there's a server in Dearborn. I guess a tree grows in Brooklyn, a server grows in Dearborn, that has been operating continuously since 1993.
Wow, what a patchwork nightmare that must be, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not connected to the internet. The bad guys would love that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We've only got about a minute left here before we get Keith Brophy coming in. Hopefully from Grand Rapids.
Yeah, absolutely. And then at 3:45, we've got, is it Melly?
Melly
Oztale. You know how to say that.
The
one.
Young Turk.
Yes,
calling
indeed.
Him from Turkey.
And he is a whiz at digital marketing, and he will be sharing his genius with us. From Turkey.
Yes.
So we've got some challenging phone call-ins today,
yes,
obviously.
We didn't get the Chicago one, but we'll bring them back some other time, maybe later this month. Here.
Yep, yep.
Obviously something happened because, again, I talked to him just a couple hours ago, and I thought we were solid, but this stuff happens. So,
yep, absolutely. That's
how
live.
Doing, Jessica?
That's live radio.
Say hi to the radio audience, Jessica.
Hi, radio audience.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's... If you do a search for Jessica at IT and the D, you'll see her pictures.
Okay.
Right? Isn't that, huh?
I guess so. I don't know. I'm going to Google that now.
Okay. All right.
Not sure you want to be up
we're gonna
there.
Have
huh?
the, pretty soon we're going to install video in here. You're going to have the Jessica cam so you can watch her during the broadcast.
But don't get distracted.
Yeah.
All right. For right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
We were looking at each other trying to figure out who was going to go first.
Yeah, yeah. So, we were pointing at each other.
That yeah, was a, yeah,
yeah. Okay.
So,
don't want to be rude.
We have Keith Brophy, the state director of the Michigan Small Business Development Center. And I think you're flying solo. I don't think you have somebody you're interviewing today, are you?
Hello. This is just me today. So I am flying solo because I want to share some information about a SBDC initiative.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. Well, let me ask you then. Autonomous vehicles are starting to become a reality. We've got lots of research going on right here in Michigan. The Michigan Small Business Development Center has begun a small business impact of autonomous vehicles initiative. Can you explain to us what that is?
Sure. As we are marching ever faster into the autonomous vehicle era, the SBDC of Michigan has embarked on an analysis. We're mapping out how the age of autonomous vehicles, self-driving connected vehicles, will affect Main Street business, local business, small business, where you might not necessarily think at first blush there would be an impact. If we step forward 10 years down the road, though, there's some changes ahead. So we're trying to map that out and share that with the small business community to do an early awareness raising.
Okay, so what type of businesses will be impacted?
In a sense, just about any business out there. And as we think about autonomous vehicles, of course, the natural place to start is to think about the impact to the automakers, the manufacturers, the supply chain, where there's going to be a different way of business. But if you think a little further out, you can picture some ripple effects. If they say that 1 million lives a year are lost in auto accidents that are preventable in the world, if you multiply that out by 1,000 accidents for every life lost, you're talking a billion or more fender benders that eventually will go away based on most research. There's a lot of body shops that may have to shift their focus. But you could also look even further out to things like restaurant locations. If somebody's launching a restaurant in an urban area today, location is key. Parking is everything. The predictions, again, based on a lot of industry-wide research, are that parking will begin to become a non-issue as we reach the full age of autonomous vehicles and metered service vehicles. Assisted living, likewise, if you have a chain of assisted living homes, there may be some different patterns in the age of autonomous vehicles when independence and quality of life will stretch out much later than they may today, where there's a dependency on transportation.
Yeah, there's always unforeseen consequences to these things, to new technologies and really new laws and regulations as well. I remember reading an article years ago in the Wall Street Journal about how podiatrists, foot doctors, and podiatric surgeons were all of a sudden busier after airbags began to be deployed in cars, because people were surviving accidents that used to kill them, but they had fairly horrific foot and ankle injuries. So you had people that were still around, thankfully, but they would need foot and ankle surgery. It was a really interesting example of one of these unintended consequences.
That's a great example of how a cause and effect are not always immediately obvious. And there's the societal upsides, but sometimes business downsides to a lot of tech transformations like this as well. For example, on the DUI front, the good news is the age of autonomous vehicles will dramatically reduce or close to eliminate probably DUI tickets eventually. However, if you are a small law practice that does a substantial portion of your business based on DUI cases, you're going to have to transform over the course of the next decade or so to probably to account for that loss of your practice. And that's what we see as we map out these ripple effects all the way to Main Street. We know the automakers are changing their way of life, but there will be these ripples across the small businesses that make up our communities as well.
Okay, so who's doing this kind of research for you?
Well, there's a lot of nationwide research on the broad issues of this type of transformation, but it doesn't really focus on what happens to the small business. So the Michigan SBDC, we're starting to assemble bodies of experts and dive into some of these projections ourselves. We provide some guidance and framework, and we're just beginning the process of talking with representatives of each different types of business, talking with some of our organizational colleagues in the ecosystem, others that are in the business of helping small business. And we're trying together broad perspectives of how the change might impact small businesses and use a bit of a evaluation vetting out process. Then eventually we'll share it all on a website for any small business to consume with, of course, the disclaimer that predicting the future is never certain. You know, we're just going to try to put our own best estimate to help raise business awareness of these changes ahead.
Okay. When do you think this resource is going to be available?
We plan to deploy the first phase of the website by March 1st with some of the early predictions for certain types of businesses, including those I mentioned today, body shops, law practices, restaurants, assisted living, and then keep expanding it. Our goal is to eventually map to hundreds of types of businesses that might be impacted. And for some of the businesses, impact projected out 10 years, maybe minimal or virtually none. For others, it may be more substantial. So this will be an incremental information sharing, but we'll launch March 1st with the first dose of information.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you to take off your Small Business Development Center hat and put on a general future guy. You've been living in the future for some time now, and your talks on what's coming in terms of tech are somewhat legendary in the Grand Rapids area. So tell me, when do you think we get to stage 3, 4, and 5 in terms of autonomy? Stage 5 being pretty much you can sit in the back seat and let the car drive you.
Yeah, I believe it's coming far faster than the public perception, which may be a little bit surprising because it's hard to pick up a publication these days without seeing an article on autonomous vehicles. But I'll circle back to my answer, my prediction. But the interesting thing about this technology is the public seems to be underestimating the speed of adoption. Now, I have been predicting the future in one way or another for more than a couple decades, since I started long, long ago as a young engineer at IBM, when we started to be involved at looking at technology around the corner. And almost always the public perception is coming sooner than it really is. But, this technology is here already today. It's already shifted manufacturing plans and strategic plans of the automakers and the supply chains. There's already production announcements about 2020, 2021, when automakers are going to have their various forms of autonomous vehicles on the market.
Well, you can argue that there already are. For instance, Tesla, as long as you pay attention, has some autonomous vehicle features. It isn't the kind where you say, take me home, and you go to sleep in the back. But certainly some elements. Then you've got the lane change warnings. You've got the speed control that's automatic, where you start to come up behind a car, it slows you down, that sort of thing. There are some aspects of it out there working right now, but I still think I'm a naysayer. I still think we're at least 10 years away.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason for the speed, though, Mike, is the automakers, in a sense, have done a kind of an end round among the public perception of governance, in that so many cars, especially your higher end cars, have elements of self-driving or automated vehicle function today, from vehicles on the market today that self-park themselves and stay in their lane. And so these features started to be deployed. And even today you can get in cocktail type dialogues with your friends, relatives, colleagues who will say, a car will never be able to handle braking if a deer steps in front of it or handling snow. The technology is already out there and in the world today. So I would put the full-fledged critical mass of cars are self-driving in a sense, level 5 or various shapes of it at about 10 years out. That is at odds with many of the leading experts who still might say 15, 20. But you can just read the signs. We've been following this space closely for quite some time, and the momentum is increasing. What I think is going to be the momentum accelerator is once these start to hit the market, the competitive drive between the automakers, whether traditional automakers or Silicon Valley upstarts, will be unleashed, and you'll start to see a race to innovate and win market share. So I think major change, critical mass within 10 years. I think we'll start really feeling the effect at least by 5 years from now, the early effect. In terms of small business gearing up, I think they need to think of a time frame where the world starts to change a bit in 5 years or more and changes quite a bit 10 years out.
One of the things, I was at a meeting with Bob Lutz back in November, Michigan Venture Capital Association annual meeting, and he thinks that it will be sort of like a train where there will be a lead vehicle that will be sort of that everybody attaches to, and that instead of, well, there'll be a car, yes, but it'll be more like a train carriage. You know, what's the word I'm looking for there? I mean, the actual coach of the train. That's what he was predicting. And then the differentiator, instead of being the exterior, would be whatever appointments you have on the interior. And then people would attach to the train, get to their destination, detach, sort of thing. It was an interesting thought, but I think that's way too futuristic.
Yeah, and the connection phase probably, you know, comes about after critical mass of, you know, autonomous vehicles around the road in a big way. I think you'll see the connection technology that those convoys of connected vehicles, yeah, they happen very early in trucking and logistics. And indeed, there's already, you know, many examples deployed already. There's been convoy tests that have gone down I-69 on public roads in Michigan.
Right.
So I think on the logistics side, you'll see that advance really quickly. On the individual get from point A to point B side, yeah, I do think eventually the autonomous vehicles we step in will be connected. If you're looking at the simulations of efficiency, there's stunning efficiency if they have these independent vehicles that then can form these, you know, connected trains and cars, spin out, spin back in when they need to.
Yeah.
You can turn six-lane highways into two-lane highways quite easily if you do the simulations about the flow with the power of artificial intelligence behind it.
Well, it's certainly disruptive technology that anybody should begin to prepare for. What the arrival date is anyone's guess, but it is coming, and smart businesses will understand that they need to get some what-if scenarios together in order to deal with it.
Absolutely. This will be the most disruptive technology of our lifetimes, I feel. But, you know, it's convergent with other technologies like the drone revolution, which will follow closely on its heels, is related to the artificial intelligence revolution, which has started and is gaining traction, is related to this. You know, big data, in a way, all of these technology transformations are converging into Industry 4.0, as our friend Tom Kelly from Automation Alley has highlighted. And then, you know, so autonomous vehicles are really the penetration point of this new age of life and business.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Keith Brophy, State Director of the Michigan Small Business Development Center. We're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time for right now. This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. Welcome back. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
And to show you the wide variety of guests we have from geographic locations, literally around the world, we have calling in from Turkey, Mele Öztele, who does my marketing with and social media. He's with SmartFindsMarketing.com out of Birmingham, but for a variety of reasons, he's living in Turkey right now. How you doing, Mele?
Hey, guys. Not wonderful. Glad to be on the show again.
Okay. So we want to
love the whole internet thing.
Yeah. It's here to stay, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a flash in the pan like Bill Gates originally thought. You know,
get it covered. So we're actually kicking off a new segment where Bailey will be joining us every month to talk about what's happening in digital marketing. And so we're going to start this off by talking about the four A's of digital marketing. Take it away.
Hey, guys, one of the things we're going to do today is we're going to do a little bit of baby boomer bashing. I'm allowed to do that because I am a baby boomer. So we're going to start off with the four A's of digital marketing, what I call the four A's of digital marketing, meaning that you need to anticipate change. It's bound to happen. It will happen. Don't expect everything to stay the same. Once you've identified the change, you need to accept the change. Now, this is the hard part for my fellow baby boomers, because what that usually means is about 30% of what they just spent in, let's say, the last 6 months or a year just went toast.
Yep.
So, you know, you can sit there and argue with Google and Microsoft and Apple and everybody else, but the reality is it's not going to change anything. You just need to keep pressing forward. Accept the change, move on. Once you've accepted the change, now you got to figure out how you're going to adapt to that change. What's it going to require in your strategies, in your marketing? What's it going to require in terms of internal staff, what they're doing, their processes? So figure out how you're going to adapt to this change. And then the last step, of course, is adopt it, include it in what you're doing, and keep pressing forward. The moment you stop, you're most likely going to lose ground, number one, and you're no longer going to be competitive. And I think this is very true when it comes to social media marketing. There's always change going on. You need to change your strategies. You need to change the demographics you're after. Keep looking after your results and move forward, basically.
Hmm. Okay, so tell us a little bit about passive versus active social media marketing, if you would.
All right, so this is the interesting part, again, my favorite subject when it comes to baby boomer bashing, because our fellow baby boomers are very in tune to the idea that they want to do advertising, which is the old method of where you create your content, you turn around and you give it to a radio station, a TV station, or to the print system, and they get it out there for you, and you never have to look back. So what happened here is that they've tried to take that same concept and apply to social media, meaning that their idea of what I call passive social media marketing is going to services like Hootsuite, which I'm not against. Believe me, we gladly use Hootsuite in our programs for our clients, and we manage their projects from there. It is a social media automation tool. Nothing wrong with that. However, it is not the end of your social media marketing. And this is the part that our fellow baby boomers seem to forget. They're looking at Hootsuite and those types of automated services as the beginning and the end of their social media marketing to just broadcast their information without taking it to the next level. All you're doing is just broadcasting, but nobody's listening anymore. I mean, that may have worked in 2007 when Twitter first started, but it doesn't work today. So Hootsuite, you know, social media automation is passive. And if that's all you do, you're doing passive social media marketing, you're not going to get very far. And you're going to keep scratching your head, why is this not working? What you really need to do is move from passive to include active social media marketing. This is where we run into trouble, because active social media marketing means you're doing relationship managing, relationship marketing. You're also going to get involved in labor. It's going to require more manpower to do this, and you can't just hit a button and make it all happen, because yes, you have to read what's going on. And one thing you'll find is that active social media marketing is much more effective today, and the demographics have changed of who your audience is, especially with the millennials being the largest population out there now. You need to change your programs towards active social media marketing.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about social selling for salespeople. I got that up.
So, yeah, this is an interesting space that has evolved in the last, I'm going to say, a couple of years. Whether you're B2C, whether you're B2B, the idea is, can you take your sales team, and instead of having them making cold calls all day long or sending out a bunch of emails and gathering business cards and then trying to contact the prospects, what if you could use social media marketing as your lead generator, have the sales guys actually be involved in social media marketing to develop relationships with their target audience? If their target audience is B2B, that's great. Then go to LinkedIn and increase your connections, engage in conversation, like people's activity, get people to notice you and start developing a conversation so that you can pull them in and start to sell to them. Believe me, it's a much warmer reception at the end of the day than, 100 phone calls that cold calls that aren't going to go anywhere. So social selling has been evolving in the past couple of years. It's becoming, I don't want to say norm yet, but certainly for the sales guys who are into the social media marketing, this is a perfect avenue. And this is where it's all going to be, especially in the next 3, 4, 5 years. This is what businesses need to move towards when it comes to their sales team.
Okay.
All right. Now, we hear a lot about using social media influencers in your marketing. How do you identify and cultivate those folks?
Yeah, so, kind of piggybacking on the last two topics where we talked about active social media marketing, we talked about social selling. In both of those cases, it's about relationship marketing. You're trying to use the digital medium to develop a relationship, get involved with people. That usually means don't pitch them the first time you talk to them. just pretend that you're at a conference or you're at a booth and you have a prospect coming up to you. The person you're going to say hi, and then you're going to carry the conversation accordingly. So the same thing happens in the digital world as well. And it's all about developing relationships. Now, influencers have been developing literally since 2006, 2007, when the social media space started to evolve quite a bit. What we mean by influencers are those people who have, let's say, 100,000, 500,000, a million connections or followers, what may be on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, it really doesn't make a difference. But what you're trying to do is develop relationships with influencers that might be in your space. And you can find influencers like that, for example, at a website like BlogDash, where you get to pitch these influencers on what it is that what your project is all about. You can then find the people that you're looking for, and what they would do is then share your content as an example. They may write a blog for you, and whatever they write about tends to go out to, their hundreds of thousands or millions of people. The other option is you might want to develop a team, go over to Fiverr.com, build out a team over there of influencers who have a large number of people that they can reach. Sometimes you need to be a little bit careful with Fiverr because you might be getting junk people. But in any case, there are ways for you to go into the social communities, identify the people that are going to be right for you, what may be in your industry or trying to reach your target audience, and having them share or post information about you and your products. Obviously, it's not going to, one time doesn't do the trick. It's going to require volume. These people have to be active for you, let's say, once a week type of a thing.
How do you define social affecting SEO, search engine optimization?
Yeah, so, one of the things that has been going on here in the last couple of months has been a lot of topics about whether or not social media marketing affects your search engine optimization, meaning let's narrow that down and just say that it's about whether or not it affects your website or web pages ranking in the search result at Google. A variety of industry peers have come up with studies indicating that social media marketing does, in fact, impact your organic ranking, meaning that, Google's algorithm is no longer just going to be based on the strength of your website on its own, but it's going to be based on how active are you outside of your website, number one. How engaged are you in social media? Are you doing content marketing? And are other people sharing the things that you're putting out there? The studies have shown that there is an impact. I know from my personal experience, small little examples like, going to Google Plus and posting a web page, a blog, or your LinkedIn posts URL into Google Plus actually helps to speed up having Google index that. We've tested that out a few times, and I'm sure Google would never admit to it. We have found that if you post to Google Plus, indexing of that web address does go faster, and it certainly then carries the conversation of does that impact your organic rankings? And the answer so far seems to be it does. I'm not entirely surprised. I mean, Google's looking at 300 different data points when it decides who's going to show up in the top 10.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about this because we're wrestling with this at Lawrence Tech, my employer, using Instagram and Pinterest for business. Oh, thank you. Yes, that's the plug. Yes, indeed. Go Blue Devils. We're bringing football back, baby.
I think they're at Michigan's schedule next year.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay. Not for a few years yet, anyway. Instagram and Pinterest for business. What do you think of this sort of visual marketing? Those are both visual-based media.
Yeah, so especially in the last couple of years, an area, something that we have talked to our clients about quite a bit, the target audience is changing. How people are consuming information is changing. We have, obviously, where everything's leaning more and more towards mobile. 60% of Google's search results are mobile, so therefore, Google's in 2017, Google's kind of putting a foot down on, hey, your website needs to meet certain technical criteria. But by the same token, what this also means is whether or not people are more oriented to visual marketing and content, maybe photos, videos, graphics, etc., versus just plain old text copy. Now, unfortunately, you don't have a choice but to continue with the text copy because that's what Google is able to use, at least until they are able to actually lay. I know that there's a program coming out right now where they're going to actually go into photos and be able to extract text. That's not quite ready yet. Until that happens, right now, businesses need to continue to add in their content marketing programs videos, photos, images, graphics, and the best places to put those is going to be Instagram and Pinterest. There's a variety of ways of using both.
I don't want to cut you off, but we're running out of time.
Well, we'll have you back to talk more about this next month. Yeah, we'll have you talk more about this next month.
We covered a lot of ground.
Yes. Yeah, we got a couple of questions we didn't even have time to get to, so I'm really glad you were here today.
We'll do it another day.
Tell people how they can find out more. You probably have lots of information on your website about all these topics. Go ahead and tell them where they can find that.
Yeah, first of all, we're headquartered in the Detroit area. We're in Birmingham, guys. So we have an office in Istanbul. We have an office in Birmingham. You can come to our website at smartfindmarketing.com. We have all our contact information there. We're a digital marketing agency of now 24 years. We've been based in Detroit all that time. Feel free to give us a jingle or contact me on LinkedIn.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast, part of the Podcast Detroit Network.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. join your hosts Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.